In recent weeks on our program, we have talked about notable advances for female coaches in the NFL and the NBA, including the hiring of Jen Welter as a linebackers coach for the Arizona Cardinals. Perhaps it was with that news in mind that on Thursday, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers launched their new effort to better engage their female fans. It's called RED, the Buccaneers Women's Movement, and it's already been harshly criticized. That's one of the items in three stories you should know, our weekly look at the sports news you might have missed. And my guests this week are John Doyle, who writes about sports for Foster's Daily Democrat in New Hampshire. John, welcome.
Thanks, Bill.
And also joining me is Cindy Boren, who covers sports for The Washington Post. Cindy, welcome. And please start off by telling us more about the Buccaneers' strategy for reaching female fans.
Thanks, Bill. Well, I think their strategy for reaching female fans comes straight from 1950. I thought maybe it was an email that had been uncovered in an archaeological dig when it came across my desk. They're basically inviting females to come to events that they're going to hold at which they will explain things to them, you know, sort of mansplain things to them, like the difference between the play clock and the game clock. That's the first lesson for this week. It's condescending, especially at a time when the NFL is the most popular TV show. You know, women actually watch it. And I think they found out a year ago when they suspended Ray Rice for two games just how much influence women have. So it was sort of embarrassing that they would be offering home entertaining and game day style tips.
Yeah, game day style tips must be especially brilliantly conceived by somebody in the organization. John, what do you think? Should the RED channel be blacked out?
Well, the game day style tips seem a little shoehorned in, if you will. You can debate on whether or not it's appropriate for a professional sports team to market to women and even explain the game to a segment of their fan base, whether it's gender neutral or not. I remember in 2001 when the Arizona Diamondbacks were in the World Series and they were only a four-year-old franchise, one of the newspapers in Arizona thought it would be a good idea to publish Baseball 101 on the morning of Game 1 of the World Series, as if to explain to the people of Arizona what the game of baseball
is all
about.
This peculiar game.
Even though they've been part of the United States and have hosted spring training for decades, that wasn't specifically geared towards any one gender, but still people found it condescending, and I expect the reception to this idea by the Buccaneers is taken the same way.
I think Tampa Bay could get around this just by calling the whole thing football for beginners. Invite people who don't know football, regardless of gender, age, whatever else. And I would be fine with that as long as the curriculum included not only the explanation of offsides and pass interference, but also some exploration of the various health risks associated with the game, maybe like the warning on a cigarette package.
Why not invite the kids in and actually use it as a teaching environment? How to play the game safely, how to avoid injury. I understand that the Buccaneers have had attendance problems over the years, but this is also the team that drafted a quarterback in Jameis Winston who was accused of rape when he was at Florida State. So, you know, there's a good idea here if you're going to work with kids and broaden knowledge of the game, but this probably isn't it.
I have also been thinking about football this week. I read an article in ESPN, the magazine, about Arian Foster, the running back for the Houston Texans, who has, quote, recently decided to become a public face of the non-religious. This strikes me as a courageous stance in a sport where locker room prayer circles are common and post-game interviews frequently begin with thanks to Jesus. John, can I get an amen?
Well, I don't know about an amen, but I don't know if you've ever noticed, Bill, that religion is a little bit of a divisive topic. For Arian Foster to be a voice of the non-religious, if you will, what I would like to see, rather, is more of a move towards uniting believers and non-believers, especially in a sport like football, where we don't know what goes on in football locker rooms, but we know that there's a lot of acrimony and there's a lot of people competing for jobs. And now you invite religion into this, where it sometimes can be divisive as well. Is the move more to just say, okay, well, here's another thing we can argue about, or is it more to say, look, if Tim Tebow can hand off to Arian Foster and they can win a Super Bowl together, then maybe there's hopes, because we know that sports can bridge divides. We've seen it happen in race for decades. So, you know, why not bridge the divide now between the religious and the non-religious?
I like the image. I would say in Arian Foster's defense that other players have come up to him and said, oh, I understand you're a devil worshiper. And he says, no, I'm not a devil worshiper. I think everybody should be free to believe whatever they want. And that seems to me to be an absolutely wonderful position.
Certainly.
Cindy?
Well, I think it would be nice if religion could be separated from football and from sports. I don't know why exactly it needs to come into the equation. I think it would be nice if everyone were professional and they looked at one another and said, you know what, I don't care about your sexual preference. I don't care about your religious preference. We are teammates. You know, let's go out and win the game. And I guess it's sort of my Midwestern roots here. I sort of prefer to keep your personal feelings about these things to yourself.
John, one of the things that you write about is high school sports. I wonder if you see evidence of players and coaches sharing their faith publicly in that context in New Hampshire.
Well, certainly. And in the New Hampshire Interscholastic Sports Association, they do combine, unlike other states where they have a separate parochial league, they do combine Catholic schools, private schools, and Christian schools and public schools all together into the same league. So sometimes you see that sort of contrast even on the field of play, where some schools will start, instead of doing the national anthem, they'll do a prayer. So it's certainly an issue on all levels of sports.
John, I understand that football is on your mind as well, but it's not the pro game, except that if college players get paid, they are sort of pros, which brings us to something Ohio State is trying to avoid, right?
Sure. The O'Bannon case, which has been much debated on this show and talked about, federal court is deliberating on whether it's fair for universities to make money off the commercial use of athletes' names. But now Ohio State has decided to sell generic jerseys with only the number 1 or the number 15 on them to represent the year 2015, mm-hmm. as opposed to selling specific numbers, because they fear if they lose this case, the O'Bannon case, then they'll have to share some of that money with the players themselves. Now, this seems to me like a little bit of a cynical move by Ohio State and big time sports in a list of many. And one could debate the appropriateness of whether or not players should be paid just for being on the team and participating in big time athletics. But you would be hard pressed to find anyone who thinks that it's okay for these schools to sell the players' numbers, names, and likenesses and not have to share some of those proceeds with the players.
Cindy, will you miss the opportunity to buy an Ohio State jersey with the number of the player of your choice on the back?
I probably won't. Although if I did buy one, I'd probably bedazzle it or, you know, do something to make my game day appearance look stylish. But, you know, there has to be an answer to compensating college players. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but there has to be some sort of compensation for using their names, their likenesses. It just seems wrong that the colleges are making tens of millions or, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars without any sort of compensation. It really shouldn't be this way.
Well, I agree. And actually, I think this is a move by Ohio State in the wrong direction. The players should be paid and then they should be compensated in terms of vouchers that give them time to actually be students after they've stopped playing football or basketball. This is a silly way for the university to cut costs. And I very much hope that people who are deprived of buying the jersey of a particular player will decide to buy no jersey at all.
No, I think you're right. I'm not sure that's the way it'll work, though. I don't think Ohio State's going to see any drop-off in its sales, but it would be nice if it did work that way.
And also, what if a player's brother or parent wants to buy just to cheer for their son or daughter playing the game? Shouldn't they be allowed to? Now they're being deprived of a chance to show their pride and to support their student athlete. And also, I think this is going to lead to a proliferation of numbered jerseys on the black market, which the school won't see any of that money. So maybe there's some pros and cons to doing it both ways.
Well, I think there's pros to the people at the school not seeing any of the money. The parents and the brothers and sisters just have to get creative. They'll have to go out and buy those felt numbers somewhere and then sew them onto the back, and they'll create their own jerseys. It'll be fine. This week, my partners in the presentation of Three Stories You Should Know have been John Doyle of Foster's Daily Democrat in New Hampshire and Cindy Boren of The Washington Post. Thanks very much to both of you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Bill.